too. I used to make my own clothes and wore vintage long before it was cool. 23. I speak French, Dutch, and random phrases of Spanish, German, Italian, and Hungarian. I understand better than I speak, so watch out in elevators. 24. I love comedy because I am actually pretty goofy. And 25. I was not popular in school. I was a loner. Seymour's new jewelry collection is available on JTV.com. That was 25 Things You Don't Know About Me by Jane Seymour. That concludes today's readings from Us Weekly. This has been Lydia Coppell for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American's Business and Oil and Lifestyle sections, followed by Far West Texas News at 7. As we reach the month of June, Recording Library of West Texas Radio is bringing out the Summer Reads. Sunday night at 9 on the History Book Hour, we begin the memoir, Me, by Katharine Hepburn. Monday night at 10 on the Armchair Adventure Hour, we start the first of our Western books with True Grit by Charles Portis. And Tuesday, we'll begin two new books. On the Noon Book Hour, we start our selection of fun beach reads with The Grace Kelly Dress by Brenda Janowitz. And Tuesday night at 11 on the Mystery Hour, we start a summer of some of the most read thrillers with the true crime book In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. We hope you enjoy our special themed hours all summer long on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 68 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 50s. Then, tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading the oil report from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 22nd. Ørsted completes Permian Energy Center with solar power battery storage capacity. The story was written by Mel McEwen. Though the Permian Basin is home to well over 100,000 wells producing crude and natural gas, the region is also home to some of the state's largest wind and solar farms. Now the region is moving further into renewable energy with the opening of the new Permian Energy Center project in Andrews County, a utility-scale 460-megawatt alternating current MWAC hybrid solar and battery storage facility. Built and operated by Ørsted, Permian Energy Center sits on 3,600 acres alongside oil and gas wells and consists of 420 MWAC of solar capacity. Its 1.3 million solar panels will generate enough clean energy to power more than 80,000 households. It also contains 40 MWAC of battery storage, a technology that is drawing attention amid the move to more renewable energy. Quote, "Storage has come a long way in the last few years," Philip Moore, Senior Vice President, Ørsted Onshore North America, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Quote, "As storage becomes more cost competitive, it will likely be part of many wind and solar projects. The transition to renewables in the U.S. has been strong and will continue, and storage plays a huge role in that transition," end quote. "The Permian Basin is an important asset to the U.S. energy market," Moore continued. He said Texas has a unique offering as the location allows for oil and gas to work alongside wind, solar, and storage. quote, "Altogether, these offerings play a critical role in powering the future energy of the country and brings more energy security to the growing economic engine in the U.S., he said. The Permian Energy Center is designed to be a standalone, single-phase project, Moore said. Quote, "Changing market conditions or future technological considerations could change this approach, but as of now, the project has been designed to be the current size," he said. In the aftermath of Winter Storm Uri in February, concerns have been raised about the reliability of renewable energy projects, wind and solar, in extreme weather conditions. Moore assured that Ørsted designs all facilities with long-term ownership in mind, bringing robust, reliable assets to withstand weather conditions based on historical and future expectations of the specific project location. The Biden administration is working to increase the use of renewables, something that gives more reason for optimism for his company. Quote, "The markets will continue to grow, and we know that the current administration is focused on developing and improving infrastructure to support renewables, including transmission. These changes will help us power the future and bring more opportunities to rural communities throughout the U.S. However, regardless of the administration, we know that there is a growing need for renewable expansion, and we have the expertise, relationships, and capital to make that a reality," he said. This new facility makes Ørsted the first developer to own the full spectrum of new renewable energy technologies at utility scale in the U.S., onshore and offshore wind, solar, photovoltaic, and storage, Neil O'Donovan, Chief Operations Officer, said in a statement. New administration brings heavy focus on climate, environmental justice. The story was written by Mella McEwen. A new administration traditionally brings a different focus to various policies, including on energy. Energy policy changes made by the Biden administration promise to ripple throughout the energy industry, and Ken McQueen of Kenergy Consulting offered insight into those changes. McQueen, former Region 6 Administrator at the Environmental Protection Agency, reviewed the four main federal agencies overseeing the energy industry for his audience at the Environmental Regulatory Seminar hosted by Midland College's Petroleum Professional Development Center and the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. He told those in attendance that the administration's energy policies focus primarily on two issues, climate change and environmental justice. At the Department of Energy, he predicted there will be debate over a carbon emissions tax, which has drawn the support of 10 of the largest oil companies. But it has drawn concern from Democrats over the impact on lower income and communities of color. A group of Western senators have also sued for a permanent ban on offshore drilling on the West Coast. Pipeline projects, from the Keystone XL to the Dakota Access to Lines 3 and 5 in Michigan to the PennEast Pipeline in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, bear watching, he added. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is coming under increasing pressure to evaluate climate impact as part of the permitting process, a significant change, he said. The commission, which oversees the transmission and wholesale sale of electricity and natural gas and regulates pipeline transmission, could undergo a change this summer as Biden could name a new commissioner to the five-member panel, possibly giving it a Democratic shift. Eminent domain issues related to pipeline or transmission line construction will also get enhanced scrutiny, he said. The agency is also in the process of creating a senior environmental justice position to ensure energy projects don't unfairly burden minority communities, McQueen added. McQueen said Michael Reagan, the new administrator at his former employer, the EPA, has made it clear his priorities are in line with those of President Biden, climate change, and environmental justice. That focus on environmental justice is already being seen in the EPA's withdrawal of a permit for a new oil refinery in St. Croix, he said, calling it the first shot across the bow regarding environmental justice. He also mentioned Gina McCarthy, a former EPA administrator, now National Climate Advisor, and John Kerry, Special Presidential Envoy on Climate. Quote, "For me, it'll be interesting to see if this group of three works well together," he commented. Other concerns for the EPA that McQueen listed include ethanol and small refinery exemptions, methane, deep water ports, and air attainment, non-attainment. There will be a lot of discussion regarding methane emissions, he predicted. And he said it remains to be seen if the administration will support deep water ports, loading facilities set up 12 to 15 miles from the coast to accommodate very large crude carrier. Air attainment, non-attainment will also be an issue, he said, noting that the EPA has been under a court order to make attainment designations for cities across the U.S., including El Paso, Big Spring, and Amarillo. Quote, "Texas hates attainment designations because it's a detriment to economic development. If a non-attainment city attracts a new industry, that industry has to meet certain requirements," he explained. At the Department of the Interior, McQueen predicted a renewed focus on oil and gas royalty rates, which may rise from the current 1/8 to 3/16 or even 1/5. Financial assurance will also get a lot of discussion amid concerns about orphaned wells, he forecast, noting that Biden's infrastructure plan includes $16 billion to clean up oil and gas wells and coal mines. Quote, "I believe it's a privilege to extract minerals, and there's a responsibility to return the land to its previous condition after," he stated. Survey finds Appalachian Basin emits more methane than Permian. Methane intensity, however, remains strongest in Permian. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Long the focus of criticism for its methane emissions, the Permian Basin has been surpassed by the Appalachian Basin as top methane emitter, a new survey finds. Data analytics firm Kairos said satellite data and proprietary algorithms found emissions from fossil fuel production in the Appalachian Basin hit 3 million tons in 2019 and 2.4 million tons in 2020. By comparison, Permian measurements showed methane emissions from oil and natural gas declined from 2.7 million tons in 2019 to 2 million tons in 2020. Quote, "Coal is big in the Appalachian Basin," Antoine Half, co-founder of Kairos, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview, noting approximately a third, 1.1 million tons, was from coal production, while the remaining 1.9 million tons was from natural gas production in the Marcellus Shale. In the year 2020, of the 2.4 million tons produced, almost half, 1 million tons, was from coal, with the remaining 1.4 million tons from natural gas. Last year, as activity shut down amid the pandemic, Kairos said methane emissions fell by 20% in the Appalachian and 26% in the Permian. Half said that beginning toward the end of 2020 and into this year, as commercial activity resumes, his company expects a rebound in emissions. But, he said, emissions intensity in the Permian Basin is on the decline, which he called an encouraging sign. He attributed that not only to industry efforts to mitigate emissions, but the addition of pipelines to capture and move natural gas that would otherwise be flared, to market. Quote, "That's an improvement, but emissions are still high, except for Russia," he said. "Russia still emits a lot," end quote. He said amid the pandemic-related decline, Russia exported less natural gas and saw more emissions around its pipelines. Even so, he said intensity of Russian emissions is less than those of the U.S. What is significant about this report is that it marks the first time Kairos has used its proprietary technology to differentiate between emissions from gas production and coal mining. Half said this ability now allows Kairos to measure the vast majority of emissions worldwide and differentiate their types and sources. Future plans include measuring emissions in major coal mining regions in Australia and China, he said. Technology to determine where emissions come from is developing rapidly, Half said, and that is key to addressing emissions by identifying the subsets of those emissions. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, a typical passenger vehicle emits 4.6 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year, so eliminating 3 million tons would be equivalent to removing about 55 million cars from the road, while eliminating 2.4 million tons would be the equivalent of removing 44 million cars, he said. Quote, "The thing is, there is a lot of progress, but it's important for industry to cooperate," Half stated. "There's a lot of concern about the role of oil and gas in emissions. It's important the industry document its efforts and demonstrate what it's doing to address emissions," end quote. In the meantime, he said his company will continue to take a global perspective on emissions using a blend of satellite imagery, communications devices, social media, the internet, and data from ground sensors to analyze emissions worldwide. Quote, "We're looking at other areas and countries. We also hope to be able to look at data on a company-by-company basis," he said. "That would allow Kairos to analyze company performance and help their client companies compare their performance with that of their peers." Quote, "Many companies say they want to be net carbon zero," Half observed. "We're tracking not only what they're saying, but also measuring what they put in place to achieve those goals," end quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, May 22nd, 2021. Texas Bounces Back by Dennis Elam, associate professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1996 graduate of Andrews High School. Wall Street aims for two-day win streak amid inflation fears. From Yahoo Finance, Friday morning. Crude oil has been tracing out what appears to be a topping pattern since early March. Pent-up demand drove price from the November low of $35 to $67.50. Price dipped $10 and is now back to $63.38. That is up $1.44 from the Thursday close. But momentum indicators are falling. On balance, volume has topped. Momentum oscillators are much lower now than where they were during March. The energy ETF XLE made a slightly higher high this month than in March. That is no doubt due to continued stock market enthusiasm. Energy service ETF XES is much weaker, which is not a good sign. It peaked at $65 in March and then fell to $47.50. After a rise to $60, it is falling again to $57. But the DJIA is up 258 points this morning after its two-week correction. This momentum will likely carry the overall stock market to a slight new high in June. Team Biden wants all of us to drive an electric car. Apparently, this administration thinks energy is free and easy if supplied to an electric car rather than a combustion engine. We just experienced a crack in the electric grid with a snowfall in Texas that would have been ignored in, say, Chicago. Here in San Antonio, CPS Energy says the natural gas suppliers are playing hardball. The suppliers note CPS is not paying the bill. Is this really the right backdrop for eliminating gasoline, power cars, and trucks? President Biden was given a ride in a Ford electric pickup. Ford claims a 300-mile range, a $50,000 price tag, and 563 horsepower. But frankly, I like my 11-year-old paid-for SUV just fine. A 50K electric is not on my horizon. I still think short-distance electric vehicles adapted from, say, a Kawasaki Mule would make a lot more sense. Use the IC car, which can be easily refueled to drive outside the city. Social mood continues to veer negative. It appears the multi-trillion-dollar Biden stimulus package will fail. San Antonio is plastered with help-wanted signs as previous workers enjoy federal payments. Stephen Moore's prediction of several million not working may already be upon us. The Economist. The Wrong Answer, by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. Texas recently opted out of federal unemployment compensation related to the COVID-19 pandemic, including the $300 weekly supplement. The reason often given is that there are as many job openings as there are Texans receiving benefits, with the implication being that people will now be more eager to enter the workforce. The talking point seems thoroughly ensconced in our political rhetoric and is unlikely to be dislodged. How, nonetheless, it simplifies and obfuscates a much more complex issue. There are certainly some people choosing not to work, at least partially, because of the added benefits. But the limited available evidence suggests that their numbers are relatively small. Many job openings are indeed going unfilled. Recall, however, that there were widespread shortages before the pandemic. In early 2020, pre-COVID, there were far more job openings in Texas than unemployed workers, despite the fact that 1.1 million undocumented people went to jobs every day. This situation reflects demographic patterns which haven't materially changed. One inescapable aspect of this phenomenon is the aging of the baby boomers. We will be confronting a labor shortage throughout the decade and beyond, and reducing unemployment benefits won't alter this trend. There are also skills mismatches. The abilities of workers and the requirements of jobs are frequently not in sync. Additionally, some workers continue to have safety concerns. With mask guidance still somewhat unclear, and a mix of vaccinated and unvaccinated people in most workplaces, it will take time for these concerns to abate. Evidence suggests that this issue is quite significant. Another factor is the changing dynamics of many families, including remote school. Moreover, childcare is difficult to obtain and expensive. Employment in childcare remains below pre-pandemic levels, and needs have escalated, suggesting that Texas requires additional capacity. Beyond these constraints is the issue of affordability, which was a problem before the pandemic. A 2018 study found average costs in Texas of center-based care of $1,080 per month for infants and $690 for toddlers, while home-based childcare was $840 for providers meeting minimum requirements. Based on federal standards, childcare is considered affordable if it costs 7% or less of household income, $437 based on median income for Texas. Quality varies across programs, with smaller class sizes and well-compensated teachers costing twice the average. In such circumstances, it is not surprising that staying home is often a better financial option. Correspondingly, those not re-entering the workforce are disproportionately female. The solutions will ultimately involve investments in education and training, more affordable and available childcare, sensible immigration reform, and other notable initiatives. Eliminating an essential source of relief for many individuals and families under unprecedented circumstances will pose additional challenges while not dealing with the real problem. Stay safe.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Middle Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. This article is entitled Shale Drillers Cabot Cimarex to Merge in $7.4 Billion Deal by Simon Casey and David Weth, Bloomberg. Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation agreed to merge with Cimarex Energy Company, disappointing investors with little overlap in the combination of two mid-tier shale drillers in an all-stock transaction valued at about $7.4 billion. The deal will give Cabot shareholders about 49.5% of the combined entity, with Cimarex shareholders holding the rest, the company said Monday in a statement. In common with other recent industry mergers, the combination of Cabot and Cimarex is an almost zero premium deal. Shares for both companies tumbled more than 7%, marking their biggest intraday declines in more than a year. Cimarex shareholders are only receiving a 0.4% premium despite COG trading at nearly twice the multiple in 2022. Leo Mariani, an Austin-based analyst at KeyBank Capital Markets, Inc., wrote Monday in a note, downgrading the Cimarex shares from the equivalent of a buy to a hold. COG and XEC also have no acreage overlap, which results in no clear strategic benefit to XEC shareholders and precludes the two companies from realizing any operational synergies, unlike other recent deals in the space. U.S. shale drillers are getting increasingly acquisitive following a sustained recovery in energy prices from the lows seen in 2020. They're also responding to investor pressure to improve financial and operational performance after a dismal few years. The Cimarex Cabot deal addresses investor demands with a heavy emphasis on returning of cash, with plans to pay a 50-cent per share special dividend on the closing of the deal, while introducing a quarterly variable dividend on top of a regular payout every 3 months. When you look at the stability of our combined cash flow through commodity cycles, you just have to say, wow, Chief Executive Officer Tom Jordan told analysts and investors Monday on a conference call. We're building an ark, not a party boat. And this new company is an ark. Combining Cabot, which operates in the Marcellus Shale Basin in Appalachia, and Cimarex, which drills in the Permian and Anadarko basins, will lead to the elimination of about $100 million in annual costs, according to both companies. The newly merged energy producer will be renamed and be based in Houston. A Permian-focused partner would have made far more sense for Cimarex, Bloomberg intelligence analysts Talen Custer and Vincent G. Piazza said in a note. Still, the new E&P will generate robust free cash flow, enhance shareholder distributions, and mitigate federal leasehold risk. The Cabot-Cimarex merger is the largest U.S. oil and gas deal since Chevron Corporation's acquisition of Noble Energy Inc. last year, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Cimarex investors will receive 4.0146 shares of Cabot common stock for each share of Cimarex common stock owned. The transaction is expected to close in the fourth quarter, subject to regulatory clearance, shareholder approval, and other customary closing conditions.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 23rd, 2021. Life and Times. Making a Difference. Photos by Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Above, Raza-style Siempre Motorcycle Club President Robert Road King, Senator.